Episode 16.
What's up, Chipmags? Welcome back. Episode 16. And even, you know, more cool, by the time this episode gets aired, we'll be coming right up on the 1 year anniversary. So it's crazy. We're already a year in. So yeah, no, that's awesome. So I was just looking at it the other day because I figured we had to be getting close. And yeah, it's middle of this month was our first episode of just us two bullshitting and kind of laying out our plans for the podcast. So 1 year down, let's keep it going. We got some great guests for the entire year. We got some next, you know, it's going to be hopefully keep growing and keep doing a good job. So can't do it without, you know, our sponsors, everybody that's helped us out, Taylor Tins, Jobtown, Crew First Culture. Check them out. Let them know that we sent you or that, you know, you went over by them and just give them some love. They're pretty good stuff. Taylor is going to be coming on next month as well. So we'll have Taylor Tins on here. We'll have Jeremy back on. We got Jobtown coming on. All those guys are going to make appearances this year. So it's going to be a great time. But yeah, without further ado, let's keep with our guests for today. So we got first of, I guess, you know, we're on the year mark. And now we got another first. We did our first special episode last time. And now we got our first one with two guests at once. So we are going to bring them on, let them introduce themselves and talk a little bit about why they're here. So we got Ryan and Alex of Kansas City and Victim Dragstrap. What's up, guys?
Hey, what's going on?
How's it going?
Fantastic. How are you guys?
Doing good.
Perfect. Why don't you guys do a little introduction about yourself? You know, you could talk about, give a little just bio about each of you.
Go ahead there,
Paul. Go ahead.
Ryan Cummings, work for Kansas City, Missouri Fire Department, not to be confused with KCK. Been here for 22 years, primarily been on a truck my entire career, a big majority of it, and then drove one of your last guests, Chad Daly, for almost 3 years, I think it was, on the rescue division. And then in one fatal swoop, you guys still there?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And one fatal swoop, like both of his drivers and myself and one other. And then I think there was like five or six guys out of that station shift that all got promoted and we're all kicked out. So was fortunate enough to do a little bit of time on a pumper up north and then about 6 months, I think it was, and then back on Rescue One downtown. And then we started up the Victim Dragstrap stuff. Been teaching with O'Byrne Fire Ground Training since its inception, pretty much. And we go around primarily in Missouri and teach there. And it's been a good time.
Sweet, man.
Awesome.
Alex Cote, Kansas City Fire Department. O'Byrne Fire Ground Training last few years, part of the Victim Dragstrap. I kind of came in at the tail end last few years of the Dragstrap and with O'Byrne. Got to work with Ryan a little bit. Chad Daly was my captain for a few months until they all got promoted and left. But yeah, I worked on Rescue One downtown for about 6 years till I went over to Rescue Nine, where they all left when I got there. So we all kind of crossed paths through Rescue Nine, and here we are.
Wow, nice. Awesome! That's cool.
We all left because they showed up. Just so you know,
that was like 2 months.
That's kind of crazy. All you guys got promoted within a year and you all like split your ways. That's
crazy. I did.
Yeah, I think
there was. You stayed.
I think it was the pumper driver. The pumper driver was like five. I was six, and the other rescue driver was 12. And then the Chad and the DSO all left. You know, got promoted to chiefs, and then one of the firefighters became the driver, and then left. I think he was a driver for I don't know, like 11 months or something like that, and already gone.
When Paul made driver, I took his firefighter spot, and then he left within 11 months.
Nice. Yeah, that's crazy how things happen. That was cool that you guys all got up there. So, you know, you guys keep throwing out O'Byrne and Victim Dragstrap. We'll have some time to talk about that, but we'll get into your kind of early career and some advice for the new firefighters like we kind of typically do on this. So, you know, our first one, just kind of talking a little bit more about yourself. How did you get into the fire service?
So my dad, I was second generation fireman. My dad worked in a place just south of here, a little suburb. He was there as a little kid, and that's all I ever wanted to go do. Did the Explore Post thing with Grandview, another small little suburb just south of us. And then was a volunteer and then did ride-alongs with Kansas City, and I was stuck, man. That's just hooked 100%. I still, like I said, 22 years on and still love coming to work every day.
Hell yeah.
I'm kind of the same thing, second-generation fireman. My dad was a fireman east of us, retired back in 2007. But grew up going to the fire station. I was a kid, rode along with him. When I got grounded, my parents didn't take my bikes away or any of that. They took my fire gear away. That's how I was at the fire station every day. Get out of school, I'd go to the fire station. Awesome. I have some cousins, uncles, Connecticut, Ohio, here locally, all firemen. So as a kid, I just grew up. That's all I knew. And I knew I wanted to be a fireman. Always wanted to be on a rescue. So I knew I had to get to Kansas City to get on a rescue because nowhere else around us really has rescues.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have really rescues either.
Yeah. Only the bigger cities are going to have any other dedicated, it's like Milwaukee, Madison, they do, but yeah, most places in Wisconsin don't, we're all kind of, you know, suburbia and got a little mix of rural. And so there's ain't many big cities, Green Bay, Appleton, Milwaukee, Madison, I think are the only really four, I can think of that. Maybe going to have those, but yeah, we definitely don't. We got so many trailers for all our rescue stuff. We said when we came down to Wichita, we were like talking to our chief, we could sell all these trailers and just get one big rescue. Like, come on, you just walk in rescue. We don't need all these. So,
no, yeah,
it's a pipe dream, never going to happen. But
we were the same way, man. We had, we still have a bunch of the trailers that say Swift Water on them or Trench Rescue. Yeah. And we did that the rescues are pretty young, you know, to Kansas City. Chad kind of touched on it a little bit, but I mean, it's a new concept really for us, and it's not 100% like grasp with everybody. I don't think everybody thinks to call them, you know, so we rely on dispatch, I think, a lot to send us on things, but it's over time, it'll change.
Yeah, sure. Awesome. Next one that we got, kind of still talking a little bit about you guys in your early career, what did you do as a new member to earn the respect of your crew when you got on?
I'm probably the closest. When I came on, cleaning bathrooms, being in the kitchen, being seen, not heard was the biggest thing for me, especially on our job. The more I did, the less they kind of gave me shit for. If I sat down, if you see new guys now sit down and not really help around the station, so all the old guys hammer them and give them more work to do. I had some guys I looked up to that I knew on the job, and they gave me some good advice, and I did what they told me, and it worked out as a new guy. So.
Kind of the same thing, man. I went down south for a second, and it was pretty lax down there, you could say, I guess. So it was a different mentality than like Midtown. Early in my career, I went down in Midtown. I think I had like a year and a half on, something like that. And I was probably more scared to be down there than I should have been. I think I was like 21, 22 years old. And so I just blended in with the grout and the bricks, man. I try to stay busy. I was in the Bay 90% of the time, probably doing kitchen work, cleaning. There wasn't a half full trash can in the station. I was constantly cleaning stuff up. Try to teach, learn stuff on my own, cleaning compartments out on the rigs, just anything to stay busy, man. In between calls, it was a busy house. So, I mean, that was kind of nice. You got to run a lot of calls, but I mean, it was constant work. I don't think I ever went to bed till 11, 12 o'clock at night every day and just constantly working.
For sure. I kind of did the same thing. I mean, I only have 2 years on now, but just still get down and just keep working. Yeah, just sitting. I was out in the Bay like 90% of my time, just going through the trucks and learning myself. And the guys are pretty good too, coming down and teaching me some stuff. So,
yeah. I learned a lot more, like just cleaning the rigs out, like constantly doing that stuff. You got it all. That's the most expensive. I tell the guys here on my job, that's the most expensive thing you'll ever drive in your life, unless you're quietly wealthy and nobody knows about it.
Yeah.
Take care of it, you wouldn't drive it down a bunch of trees or anything. So I'm out there washing it on my own or cleaning the compartments out, and it was a triple engine house. So I'm just out there screwing around all day long. But I know where everything is in every box, in every compartment. what light bulbs out in what compartment, you know, like little weird stuff like that. So I don't know. It's beneficial too.
Cleaning the rig's a big thing. When I got on Rescue One, I was had two years on the job, got down to a rescue. I was very fortunate. Pulling stuff out to clean it, that sparked conversation with the old guys coming out. I could ask them questions like, what is this? I mean, on a rescue, there's 50% of the stuff I'd never seen in my life.
Yeah.
So pulling stuff out, cleaning it, that would spark a conversation, and then it turned into training. Just from cleaning one compartment, we drill for an hour or two on that piece of equipment. So the little things add up to the big things.
Especially yeah, for if sure. It's important to know where every tool is as a probationary, because you'd be the one grabbing the tools most likely for the senior guys. So yeah. Getting in there and actually knowing exactly where everything is at a timely fashion goes a long way on the scene.
Makes you look a lot better, like you actually care. They appreciate right. that. So
right. yeah.
And you'll get this stat.
Yeah. It's definitely like, so ours is even, I'd say, kind of more challenging with the probation, because like, you know, you guys, you get assigned to your engine, your truck and stuff. We've got on that lower bay, there's five, you know, we got all the trailers, but we got five heavies that, depending on what rings out, you're on one of them. You know, we yeah. have to cross staff everything. So you got these probationer members that, I mean, we even right now, it's fortunately going to change with our new engine, but that's going to be 3 years from now. We have a rural and a city engine. So like there's a rural fire committee, and then our city, they, you know, wanted to have separate engines that they supplied, they paid for. So if we get a call in the out in the boonies, we have to take our stuff from the city engine and jump on the rural engine, which is set up 90% the same. But the little things like the piss cans, the extinguishers, the PPV, the stuff that you use all the time is on different spots in all of the rigs. So it's like, you know, it really kind of sucks as a new member. You really got to spend more time down there, because you never know which one it's going to be on that you're called for. And you got to know the spots on all of them. So I think, you know, Brendan did a great job when he started. And I think that's something that you notice a lot with new guys and gals is when you get on a scene on the squad or the rural engine, ones that don't maybe go out all the time, and you ask them for something, they go right to it. You're like, okay, this person, you know, they've been checking out the trucks. They know exactly where these things are. They're not just, you know, down there to look busy.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a heck of a challenge for you guys too, having to memorize multiple rigs, you know.
Yeah.
Not just assigned to one.
Yeah. That's the nice thing that's going to change, like I said, is with that new engine, the rural and the city group, they're going to go in on it together, and they realize that it's kind of, you know, annoying for us to do that. So now we'll basically have a primary engine, we'll have our squad still, and then we'll have that as like our older one's going to be a backup. So no. A lot less jumping around. So that's one step in the right direction, but
yeah.
All right. You know, after that, now we've got some more talk about the victim drag strap. So you guys are coming on here. You guys are part of that. We got to, Brent and I both got one down in when we were with you guys in Wichita, and got to hear you guys talk a little bit on it. Got, you know, have Chad on the last one. So now's the time to shine and talk about it. So, you know, the first one is just, what's the inspiration behind victim drag strap?
Yeah. So Chad, and he kind of talked about it, so we'll kind of be walking over him a little bit, I'm sure. But he came to work one day, and it was kind of funny, because like Chad, you guys have met him in person too. That guy is, I call him the mall walker, man. Everywhere he goes, he's like 90 miles an hour, you know? And so that's why he would come into work all the time. And so every day he'd come in and he had something new. And so he was talking to me about it. And he said, I've watched this thing, and this guy wears, and I can't, for the life of me, I can't remember the guy's name. But he had two different size gloves. And then his idea originally was to handcuff himself to the victim. And I'm like, well, that's a terrible idea. Like, I see where your head's at, but like, let's see if we can mess with this. So then kind of screwed around with it. I don't know. It was probably within an hour we had something kind of figured out. He had something, and I think that's kind of when somebody else had kind of stepped in, and I don't remember if it was Paul or not. But they, I came and grabbed a piece of webbing, and it took, I don't know, a year or two later before Chad reminded me of this whole story of how it actually all rolled out. But I grabbed a piece of webbing and tied the thing in a loop. And I mean, you guys see how it's laid out and how you remember from, you guys have been coming to Wichita since the beginning. So you guys remember the very first demo we had of it.
Yeah, we'd seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it was a piece of webbing, you know, and then it slowly just kind of, you know, rolled into this thing. And it wasn't, but 2 months, 3 months, maybe of Chad wearing this, or all of us on the crew wearing one of these, that Chad had the first grab. And it was kind of a messed up deal. Like, they kept calling the ladies in the front yard screaming, saying that she's got somebody in the house. The people inside are missing her. And it's back and forth on the radio type thing. And I believe that they were really trying, you know, to really find him. And they really felt like it was clear. Chad and I believe Paul went upstairs, got the victim. And you know how any fire scene, whenever they have a victim, everybody wants to help.
Mm-hmm.
And I came off the roof and ran in the front door and was like shoving people out of the way. Like, no, nobody help them. Let's see if this thing works. Like, it was kind of funny, but it worked exactly how we thought it was going to. And we've just evolved it. Once Cote and Locke showed up, those guys just really transformed it into more of what it is today. And it's awesome. It's what we have now is we've got multiple grabs all over the country. The guys have been running these things. People are finally on the victim survey. There's a spot in there that says other now. And so you can put it in there and explain which one you use. Like, if you use the Anderson strap or the victim drag strap, preferably. But you can put that on there, and then it kind of puts a little earmark for each one of us. But that was kind of the beginning of it. It just came up with the little idea that there was a problem. Around that time that all that happened too, there was so that video that came out of New York where it was the surveillance cameras of that, of them dropping a victim. Like, that was all around that time. And so now it's in the limelight, and we kind of, the class we kind of teach is like our, it's called our Dirty Little Secrets. Like, what actually happens behind the closed doors, you know, like everybody, we come out with your family member. They're like, oh my God, you guys are heroes. We love you guys. You know, you did so great. Yeah, well, we dropped her like 15 times.
Just beat the shit out of them.
Sorry about that, you know. But that's the God's honest truth. Like, what happens in that building, nobody knows except for the guys in that building, guys and gals, whatever, you know. Yeah. And so that's what we kind of just make it quicker. I mean, by the time you're done with it, you have enough energy to go right back in. We see it time and time again. We just taught in Goodlick, Kansas. And those guys did, I don't know, 4 or 5 drags a piece. And they still had energy to go right back in and go do it again.
Yeah.
Now, granted, they're not in heat and smoke and doing overhaul and everything else, but I mean, they're still ready to go back in and go drag again. So imagine trying to do that with just yourself and no means of getting them out, you know.
Just the arm, or your grip strength and everything else. I mean, we've been training with ours too, and I love it. I mean, it can kind of lock in, and you're not using a bunch of your like arm muscles. You can just kind of lock in and use more of your lower body. Less fatigue actually dragging the victim out.
Yeah, so when I was on Rescue One, we had a fire, 3-story apartment building. Ben entered search, found a guy, and it took 6 of us to get him out. Next day I called. So I wasn't a part of the drag strap in the very beginning. It was Ryan and Chad, Paul, who had the ideas. I didn't work with them. I called them the next day and I'd heard about the drag strap. I said, I got to get this in my gear. How do we do it? And, so they got me set up with it and then ended up at Rescue 9. Like Ryan was saying, we started playing around with different ideas and sewing and, came up with pretty much what we have today. So I had a couple grabs without it, and it was terrible. Kicked them, dropped them, took 5-6 of us, took forever to get them out. And then now with this, one person can do it pretty much.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we'll kind of go in with the next one regarding that. What are some dragging techniques that you can use the drag strap for? So what are some things you've experienced? I know you guys, when we were down in Wichita last time, you guys were – Chad was talking about that he'd been hearing some new ways of doing it. So, you know, what are the kind of the ways that you guys know of right now?
So this started as victim removal. Everything we get in our gear is for us, right? The DRDs, all that's to save us. So now with the drag strap, you can also use it to rescue firefighters. But it started with victims only. they were teaching in Texas, and another firefighter was like, what if we use this to pull firemen out and you can wrap their pack straps? And it goes back to a one person rescue, and you can actually face your way out of the building instead of dragging them backwards. So it's evolved. It started as a chest drag. Then what about your environment? Keep them 18 inches or lower. So we evolved it to ankle drags and wrist drags. So there's quite a few different options on it. The chest drag is our go-to. We have smaller houses where I work. So chest drag them out 30 seconds, a minute, instead of trying to crawl over hoarder conditions, things like that. But the ankle drag is a very good one also.
Yeah, we got to mess with it right when we came back. When we had it, we just got a training center this year, so we kind of went into it. We were doing we just so happened to be doing a search on with our POCs and everything. So Brett and I each went in there a couple times and made sure that we each got reps on each other. But we stripped down to, you know, our shorts and t-shirt as best we could, and they had, you know, theater smoke. Won't let us do any of the fire stuff, but with real people, but for good reason. So then we were in there, but you know, the metal floor and even the theater smoke, it was still a little slick. So it was kind of nice to get that. But yeah, I think we each tried like two or three different ways. And yeah, there's just having that, you can lock in and do so many different things. I mean, at the one point, like the last one we did, it was really clear. So he was facing feet towards me. So with one hand, I just like girth hitched him with it, with my right hand with there. And I was able to stand up and drag him by his ankles just like that. I was like, damn, like, yeah. You know, there's so many different ways. Your own imaginations, you know, the limit.
You brought up taking your clothes off for training. That's a big one we do. We'll get down to our boxers when we go teach these class. We'll get down to our underwear, yeah. Lather ourselves with Dawn dish soap.
Yeah,
and have them come in and get us, because that's the reality. I mean,
yep.
Sweaty, wet, skin sloughing off. It's yep. That's the most realistic we've come up with so far.
Yeah,
it sucks for us, but
yeah, get beat up, especially on a metal floor with a bunch of.
Oh my god! Yeah, ours. It was a great idea how they have our training center set up. So like, it's got movable walls so that you can change it and make the different. But there's just metal tracks on the bottom that stick up to connect everything. So yeah, you start getting dragged on that. And it's like, oh, ow. Oh, like you catch on everything. It's a great idea. I don't know how else, you know, you could have done it besides maybe making it flush. Like, I don't know why that wouldn't be a reason that you could do it that way. But, you know, it's cool for making it different, right? You know, you're able to smoke it up, make it totally different inside. You have no idea, you know, what ways you're supposed to go. It doesn't look the same, but yeah, it hurts there. I think Chad mentioned throwing a dummy in like a latex suit and lathering that up too when you do live fire and stuff. So that's something our captain's looking into.
Some of the ideas Chad has, don't take all of them. Don't get them. Yeah, that's not why he owns the latex suit, mind you.
He has to make money somehow.
Yeah. He comes up with some good ones. They are, I mean, it is a good idea, but our Amazon search history is kind of strange after but
you have that,
yeah, he's came up with wrapping the forearm with Saran wrap, which makes you want to like it feels like sloughing skin type stuff.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, yeah. Man, that's a great idea, you know?
Yeah.
Huh. So, I mean, he does, there are some good ones, and that we try to do that. We've done it in like the jumpsuits, you know, the mechanic suits or whatever. And then we'll wrap our arms and legs. And then that way we're getting that dirty instead of, you know, our normal clothes. But
yeah,
not everybody keeps their training facility clean. So
yeah.
You can ruin some clothes pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Awesome. You know, next one's still talking about it. What are some of the benefits that you've discovered with the drag strap? So for, you know, victims or firefighters, just kind of, what have come around from it?
I think one of the big ones is being able to go back in. It's been said in a bunch of classes too, like, who would you rather go back in and do, you know, finish the search up, a whole new fresh crew, or the guy who already knows the layout up to that point, you know, mm-hmm. that's already clear. being able to run right back to where you ended up or where you stopped and then take off again and still have energy, I think is a big part of it. That's what I've seen. I haven't had to pull it yet. I mean, it's just a matter of time, really. But that's still having the energy to still keep doing your job even after it's all said and done. I truly believe I think you could get two or three, you know, grabs and dragging them back out and still go in and help finish up what you need to go finish up for everybody else. Before, man, you were gassed with just one victim. I've seen it done in multiple fires before we did this. You know, guys are just spent, you know, just and they still haven't even gotten the victim out yet. You know, being in a low grade basement, you know, stuff like that. It's, I think being able to help yourself, you still got to go do lunges, still got to work out. Can't go hang out on the recliner every day, you know, like everybody wants to, but you still got to be prepared to go do it. But I think this really, really helps you with distributing the load. Like it was, you know, in a way designed with kind of inadvertently, but you have grip strength left. You're not just gassed. I mean, I think that's huge. So
I'll piggyback on that with the you're not gassed. A few weeks ago, two guys on our crew, one of the owners of Drag Strap and a instructor Pro Burn, him and his partner made entry. They had the victim out. They tossed him in the front yard before a hand line was even stretched and went right back to searching. And like they hadn't done any work. It was just that easy. So they can he may show up here at the very end and he can talk a little bit about it if he makes it, but I mean, it's impressive how you're not gassed.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, it's even more beneficial for, like, you know, for our department, for these smaller ones. Cause you know, we don't have 60 people showing up on the first alarm. Like it's us going in with multiple bottles of multiple, you know, reps to make sure that everything's done. So just being able to have more energy and get that quick. Yeah. If we're, you know, to make one, it's going to be extremely helpful. Yeah, it's not, you know, we got our old Milwaukee Lieutenant Blatz. You know, he always talks about back when he was in Milwaukee, he could have pissed out the fire with all the guys that were showing up. And, you know, now, you know, we're waiting 15, 20 minutes for, you know, a third engine to show up. You know, once we empty our house with our part-timers, you know, our next mutual aid's coming from 15, 20 minutes away, and they're volunteers. So now you got to go from the house to, you know, to the station and then to come out to us. You know, it's, you're by yourself for a decent amount of time.
Yeah. That's a beneficial part of it there too. I mean, you got a lot of work to get done. Both of us worked in small towns, you know, prior to here. And it is a nice thing. You get to do every part of the fire scene. Like that is awesome.
It's a lot harder to hide too. That was what Blatz always talks about. Blatz loves about small time is, he said Milwaukee, you know, you could piss all the fire with the people, but you say you got all the yard shepherds that are just standing out front. And so you could spend 30 years on a big city and not do a single lick of a job on the fire ground. Nobody's going to know any better, but you know, here you're going to know somebody ain't carrying their weight.
Oh, we find them. We know.
We don't get new gear that often.
Yeah. that's a real good point. But yeah, that's an awesome benefit. Next one that we have. So on the drag strap, what's the best thing that you learned from working on the drag straps, whether it be with actually, you know, the grabs made from it or just the development of it? What was kind of the most important thing, the best thing that you learned from the whole process?
I'd say for my point of view is the development. We show up to work, we're all firemen. We know how to be firemen, but to see the backstage stuff, I mean, NFPA and how our gear is made and the thought that goes into everything that protects us, that was really cool for me over the last few years. Going to the manufacturers. So this being manufactured in Mountain Home, Arkansas. So being able to go tour the facility and see all the thought and everything that goes into making our fire gear is very impressive. And the networking, getting to obviously meet you guys and meet all the manufacturers and the salesmen. I mean, they're salesmen. They sell firemen stuff. So now we're able to kind of give them our side of things and make everything better, which has been really cool for us.
That's cool.
Yeah, trying to explain after FDIC last year, they had like a wash down on that. That was kind of funny. They're like, Ryan, what'd you have? And I'm like, we need stickers. And they're like, what? I'm like, we need something to give out, man.
Yeah.
And like, but like, okay, so like heat rated stickers and like, or reflective. And I'm like, no. Like, we're 12 year olds. Like, we just put on Yeti cups and helmets and stuff. And they're like,
I was gonna say, your sticker from the one I got in Wichita, it's on my water bottle for work.
So oh, is it?
That's filled with stickers. You're a 12 year old. You're right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Yep.
Mine looks about the same.
Yeah.
Who's that?
Yeah. Chad probably didn't bring that up. I don't know if you guys can see it or not.
I don't think he did. No.
See, no. That's his mom. So not really. I mean, that's not really what she looks like. His brother, the battalion chief that was there, Matt, I think he talked about it.
Yeah.
He used to always throw out the mom jokes. Like all the time.
Yeah.
So he was one of the original owners of O'Byrne. And so then they made a sticker of his mom, Caroline. And then you'll see like on our Facebook stuff, if you flip through any of it, there's pictures of us and having like photo ops with the mom. It's an older lady, but that's Chad's mom through a whole bunch. Everybody's got pictures of it. Everybody's got stickers. There's other stuff coming. I mean, it's an ongoing joke, but yeah, awesome. That was awesome. Like he was saying too, like going and seeing the manufacturing side of it, that's something that we don't get to see, you know.
Oh,
like,
yeah, for sure.
Or even things we don't think of, you know, like, well, you're gonna go put this in gear, well then it's got to be NFPA approved. Well, are you gonna go pay the 10 grand it costs to go do that, or you just use, you know, there's all kinds of equipment and materials and stuff that are already approved. If you just use that stuff, then it's a go, you know. So that was interesting. And you know, you guys have the ones with the magnets on them. Mm-hmm. It's not as simple as going to Home Depot and buying a magnet like that. I don't know how many magnets we went through and all the stuff we had to figure out with that to make that work. Like that
it's
was
a solid magnet. Yeah, it's
pretty good.
Solid magnet. I'll go lean up like on a door or something. Also, yeah. Stuck to it. Like, oh shit, that's right. But
yeah,
no, it's a solid magnet.
I've walked around with, you know, metal objects attached to it every once in a while that are lightweight or whatever. It's not bad. I mean, they come right off, but
yeah,
there's just, I mean, that was interesting. Like seeing that part of it, the networking side, that was really cool. Trying to explain to the salesman that, you know, the salesman come to my fire station. I'm on tech support, which is the committee that decides all the stuff for us to, you know, carry or drive or wear or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, they're not coming to talk to me. They're just coming to try to sell us something like regular firemen. Nobody cares. You know, like you need to go downtown and go do that. And so those guys are salesmen. What we're trying to tell them is like, listen, us going to the shows and stuff, that's going to help out a lot. They want to talk to firemen. I can walk into a fire station and go have dinner with them without even wanting to have dinner.
Yeah,
you know, right. You guys show up, they're just waiting for you guys to leave. You know, so there's a difference there. And so it's interesting to say the least, but it's been fun.
Yeah. Awesome. And then, you know, we'll kind of let you throw in anything that we missed or, you know, how can we get it right now? How can you get the victim drag strap? What are you guys working on? Any, progress on that?
So there's suppressiongear.com. You can, obviously get on there and it's, as soon as you click on that, it's the very first thing. You can find us on, victim drag strap on, Facebook. There's Instagram, send us you guys can get a hold of any of us and we can get it. We can send you the links or whatever. If you're in the Kansas City area and you don't want to pay for shipping, you can get a hold of me. I've always got a stockpile of them laying around. And then that way you can skip out on the shipping side of it. And then you're good to go, man.
Awesome. And we'll put that link when this episode posts. We'll put the suppression gear link there. So
yeah.
You'll be able to click on it there. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of all the questions we have for the drag strap. You know, is there anything else you want to throw in that we miss? You want to shout out about it?
I really appreciate you guys having us on for this, man. I know we're way under time.
We got more questions. This is just the end of the
day.
We don't kick you out too much. Too fast.
Yeah, no, we really appreciate giving us the opportunity to kind of get out there and kind of seeing the vision behind it and seeing what it's, you know, that it's actually worth it. So we appreciate
thanks guys
it.
For coming on.
Yeah, awesome. Talking about the drag strap, that was great. So yeah, you know, check out the drag strap. We'll have that linked in there. But yeah, it was cool for that part. So no, we got a couple more questions just that we'll kind of go back to the original format. So about just advice for new firefighters and what you guys got for it. So The other question we have on here that we like to ask everybody once we discovered it, and I'm going to give no explanation for it, is just why are we here?
Go ahead, Bob.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
We got a third showing
so
up.
The broke guy just showed up.
Surprise guest.
Hello.
What's up?
This is What's Christian up? Lockridge.
I was going to say, why don't you give yourself a little introduction? Tell us about you. We just finished up the drag ships. Now's your opportunity. We'll let you talk a little bit more about it. They said you got some experience to share on it, too. So,
Yeah, we talked about your last grad. So about how easy it was. You went in and were able to go back inside and keep searching. So if you want to.
Yeah, let me pull up the notes for it. I kind of take notes of big incidents and fires. Real quick, I'm Christian Lockridge. I'm on Rescue 9A shift. Ryan was one of my drivers for a while. Cody is my senior fireman. We've all worked together for quite some time now in the rescue division. So, that's why we're all kind of intermingled with the victim drag strap. But, the last grab was on January 11th, with the strap. Honestly, it was not a drag to write home about. It was the easiest drag I've had. Walking up to the house, we noticed it was 2.5-story. Smoke, heavy smoke and fire showing from the second floor. Noticed that the half-story had operable windows, cars in the driveway, and an AC unit. Told the partner we were going to the half-story above the fire. And walked up. Typically, we go to the C-side door, pop that door. But there was a B-side door, so we decided to go in there. Pop the door real quick. 100% visibility, no mask needed, but we knew we were going above, so we decided to mask up real quick, walked right to the stairs, and the guy was on the landing with fire and smoke pushing down on top of him. Really, I could have just grabbed him and went. It was daylight from the front door. Cody and his partner were coming in. We were the only four guys in the house. There was three trucks on scene with no water, so that was kind of fun. We were actually training, like 4 blocks away. I don't know if these guys went over that, but we were training 4 blocks away. And we caught this call, with a new guy. And, we had a new guy with us, which would have been a perfect opportunity to give him his first grab on OJT, which would have been cool, but it's time to work. So I used the victim drag strap real quick. It was the first grab with our manufactured strap for me. So I decided to use it. Probably didn't need it. The guy was like $160 maybe.
Yeah.
Just did a dirty chest grab real quick, wrapped around his chest, walked him down the stairs, and then right out in the front door. Very, very easy, smooth grab. And then I kind of messed up. I didn't really pay attention to who was on scene. There was no EMS yet. And the guy was completely naked. I dumped him in the snow in the front yard. And then I just went back to work. I went back inside. I kind of got that tunnel vision. I just knew I had knew we had more work to do. So hopefully EMS got there really quick. They actually gave him a cyanide kit, and from the sounds of it, he survived. But very simple grab, very smooth, very easy. Definitely had enough energy to go back inside after using it. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet. I mean, think about it. There's not much you could have done different for throwing them out there. I mean, you don't have anything. It's not like we carry blankets on us or anything. Like,
no, but I listened to quite a few podcasts. I listened to Isaac Frazier's the other day on the Grabs podcast, and he said that last grab they had, no EMS was on scene, so he actually had his face piece off on her, giving her oxygen. And I mean, I could have done something like that, but I didn't really pay attention.
Yeah,
we had so much stuff going on. We had an OJT guy, a new guy with us. So we were focused on making sure he was safe and, learning at the same time. I didn't really pay attention to what was going on around me, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
I won't either if I was in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a good point. Especially, for us, we get just as much snow too. I mean, it's freaking snowing right now in April. Yeah, snow days and everything canceled, it's something to think about, but yeah, that's for us, like we've been talking, it's a while before we get mutual aid or anything that comes in. So typically we have an ambulance rolling right away, unless we were, out on training or there was already an ambulance on a call. Like Typically, there'll be one rolling out with us because we got packs on our ambos. We got piss cans on them now too. So it's they're firefighting pieces of equipment. So I mean, you kind of came in right at the tail end. So we were just wrapping up the drag strap, but we'll let you kind of talk about, you know, any lessons, anything that you learned that you'd like to share while creating the drag strap. Now that it's in service, you're getting the experience with it. Like, you know, what was some of the best things that came from it?
I mean, really, you know, physical fitness is a pretty big part in the fire service. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not the greatest at it. You know, I try to do some here and there, but I don't keep up on it like a lot of guys do. But for me personally, the Victim drag strap, I mean, it literally makes it almost effortless as far as using all of the muscles in your body to just hold on to somebody while you're dragging them. You know, we drag dummies and we drag each other in training. But nothing can replicate a real fire ground, unless you have that victim on the fire ground. And then once you're there, it's time to work. You know, it just takes out, I don't know, takes out some effort really. And I mean, not trying to sound lazy, but if you've got work to do afterwards, you need that energy left. And it helps a lot. You know, through the process, we've had different prototypes. We've had webbing and stuff like that we've worked with until we got to the point where what we have now, it disperses the weight. You know, it's not a thin piece of webbing digging into your shoulder or a piece of cord or anything. And that was one thing I noticed. You know, my collarbone stick out quite a bit. It dug into there. So I don't know. I recommend don't knock until you try it.
Absolutely.
And if you've ever had a grab and you didn't use a piece of webbing or something you deploy out of your pocket, which
like a hasty harness the big halo, you mean you can't put the halo around them and make the
I love guys trying to think outside the box and, you know, training themselves on plans B, C, and D when plan A doesn't work. I love it.
Yeah.
Realistically, it's just not going to work. You know, not for me personally. I don't have time. I don't have a lot of times we don't have the visibility, and that's a huge thing.
Webbing rolled up in an EMS glove doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
Might work for somebody else, but it doesn't work for me, and it's not quick.
No. You know, the drag strap is just it's fast. It's right there, ready to go.
Yeah.
And then when you're done with it, like my last one, I dumped into the snow. I literally just put my arms up in the air. It magnetized back to itself, and I went right back to work, without skipping a beat.
It doesn't hurt. That's one of the things I love about it is, like, you don't notice it. You know, it doesn't affect your gear. It doesn't take up any space. It's something that's already in there. It makes use of the DRD to actually do something. It's just right there, and it doesn't hurt. It doesn't really change any of your techniques. Like, you still have to do all, you know, the tripod drag, chest drag, whatever. All it does is assist you. Like, so, you know, we haven't had any kickback on it. Like, nobody by us has really goffed at or scoffed at it and said that there's no use of it. But yeah, it doesn't hurt, and it's not another thing that you have to carry in your pocket. That's what I love about it the most is everybody's got their pockets filled with shit that, you know, they use here and there.
I have nothing in my pocket.
Yeah.
I'm sure these guys talked about it, but there's all kinds of shit out there for it. Like weightlifters, some of the strongest, you know, powerlifters in the world, they couldn't lift what they lift with their natural grip strength. So they use those straps. You know, we come across these victims of all shapes, sizes, you know, everything. We're going to come across that victim where we're like, okay, we need everything we've got. You know, you can't physically get your hands around their wrists or ankles, you know, let alone two wrists, two ankles, you know, maybe their legs, you know. So it's just another tool that we've got, and it's been proven, it's effective, and it's made multiple grabs.
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys had a conference not that long ago too, I thought, up there that I believe Chad was at, and there was like a 16-year-old girl or something that drug Chad like in and out of the building or something like that.
Yeah, it was like a big, like in Wichita, right?
No, I thought
was it Sawdust? Was that at Sawdust?
Sawdust.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a 16-year-old girl. I mean,
yeah, she dragged Chad, no problems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the, that'd be hard to do. I mean, even when I first came on to drag a grown man at my 100 pounds at that time to grab by myself and drag him out, you know, it just gives the upper hand, I think, you know, for those that might struggle a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys coming to Sawdust? It's next month.
Is it?
Yeah.
I know that it was on, it's on our list.
Yeah. May 4th and 5th, I believe.
Some of the guys are coming up. I'm not sure who yet.
Sweet. Just a quick little shout out there.
Yeah. No, no, no. For real.
No, that's awesome.
I'd love to come up there.
Yeah. I mean, that's great. So, you know, unless we gave them the opportunity, if you got anything else that you'd like to throw in about the drag shop, anything you want to make sure shout out or anything, now's the time. Otherwise, we got a couple of closing questions for you guys.
That's about it. If you guys are interested, I know the price on it, you know, that wasn't set by us. That was all salesmen. But if you could get your job behind it when you're specking out new gear, do that. It does a couple things. One, it gets the gear companies to call, and that we've already had that phone call, and they're like, who are you guys and why are we having to talk to you? But there's a few departments out there, bigger departments that have shown interest in it. So make the gear company, you know, put it in there and then put it part of the bid. That way you don't have to pay for it. No, there's a couple around here that did it. So
wait, yeah.
Yeah. We'll definitely give our gear guy a shout out.
Absolutely.
When you came in, we were kind of asking the question that we don't give any background to, because people have taken it every which way. Chad's taken it the most unique way when he was on here for it, and
weird.
You know, see where people go with it. But the question's just why are we here?
You could give the TV version or the true version. I think all of us are. Both. Yeah, the TV version is, oh, I like to help people.
Nah.
I mean, yeah, okay. That's probably what you tell your neighbor and stuff. But I think we're truly adrenaline junkies, man. I got that. Locke said that one time, and I'm like, man, you might have just hit it. I grew up trimming houses. That's what my dad did on the side. I hated going to work every single day and trimming out closets and basin staircases, you know, stairways. And, you know, I hated doing that. I'll do it for fun here and there, but I don't like doing the same thing every day. And now we don't do the same thing on every call, you know, and that's fun. Every day is different. Every minute's different. I think that's what it is personally.
Yeah. Yeah. Those tones are, you know, no day is the same. Every day is here. We had all this snow that came in. It's wet and heavy. Just our last shift, we had a guy driving down the road, tree fell on top of the cab, absolutely crushed the, like, it looked crazy. It landed square on the passenger compartment. Dude was perfectly fine. Yeah, you know, it was the perfect, like, the tree fell basically right on his lap, and we got the door open and he was able to come out. And like, just, we heard that call come in, and like our dispatch, we asked about injuries, and they were like, the callers are just saying where it landed, they assume injuries. And we were like, Jesus. And rolling up, like, I will never see that again. You know, it's a crazy, crazy thing to happen. I mean, just, once in a lifetime, never going to experience it again. Just, that's what every day can be, you know, and every day is going to be new. Every day is going to be different. And yeah, I got the adrenaline pumping. That was great.
We all want to say we're here to go to fires and for them and all that, which we are. We all want to go to fires. That's all we want to do. We don't want to run EMS. We don't want to change 9-volt battery at 3 a.m. But for me, it changed my perspective at home, at work, where we work is lower income. So 2 a.m., 3 a.m., we get called for chirping smoke detector. We show up, we replace the battery, we go back to bed. To a lot of guys, they're complaining about it and call somebody else or pipe burst, call a plumber. Where we work, they may not be able to afford to call a plumber. So for us to show up and make that difference in their day and their life, we're their only option. 911's free to them. So then to come home and have a little problem at home, think about the calls we just ran, replacing that smoke detector or burst pipe. And it makes a world of difference at home that my problem's not that big. And to know that we made a big difference for them and we were able to fix their pipe or whatever. 9-volt battery to me and you, $5 at the store isn't that much, but that might be a lot to somebody else, and we can give them a free battery, and we have the ladder to fix it. So that's a big one for me.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan touched on how I feel. I always, you know, to me, I'm still a new guy. I've only got 8 years in the fire service. But I always ask our new guys and OJT guys, you know, why do you want to be a fireman, or why did you want to be a fireman? And I always tell them, don't give me that bullshit answer of I want to help people. Everybody's good nature is to help people. Everybody on this planet doesn't want, I wouldn't say everybody, but most generally good people want good things for people. Whatever. I'm an adrenaline junkie. I mean, I can remember growing up, you know, riding four-wheelers, jumping them, chasing that dopamine, that rush, you know, parachuting out of a airplane with my wife when she turned 30, you know, stuff like that. It's, hell yeah. I'm in the fire service because I'm an adrenaline junkie. It is something different all the time. I have ADHD like crazy.
I think we all do. That's a requirement of the job.
If I worked a line job like at Ford or some plant, oh my gosh, I would lose it. But like in like Cody said, you know, that 3 a.m. smoke detector, it's something different, you know. Do we do it all the time? Yeah, we do it frequently, but not every day. Yeah. But, you know, do we run EMS every day? Absolutely. Do we run fire every day? Mostly, but not, you know, here and there we get, you know, our dry spells, but it's just always something different. It keeps me personally, keeps my brain functional. You know, I can't do that. I couldn't sit at a desk like this all the time either. I don't know.
No. Nope. Brennan, what's your favorite quote that it'd probably make you want to do?
Clean my ears out with a Glock.
it's usually going to be a good day if there isn't a suicidal comment by noon on our shift. There's got to be somebody's jumping off a hose tower, kickstarting a landmine, whatever it may be.
I like that one.
I appointment with the 45.
Yeah, usually it's followed by sensitivity training, and the EAP shows up, but we typically run them off by like 10 minutes. So, but no, we talked about it, you know, not hundreds, we haven't even had hundreds of episodes, but basically every episode about the whole, you know, I'm here to help people. That's not going to be, you know, your actual answer. That's the TV one, like you said. I mean, you know, we talked about us working, we went big city on a private ambulance before we got hired as fire, and you're not helping someone every day. You know, that's not what you're doing. And if that's why you truthfully feel like you want to do this job, you're going to get burnt out really quick. You know, like you said, I feel like, you know, us going down there and having the mindset we've talked about of that, you're not necessarily helping everybody, that not everybody needs 911, but you kind of laugh it off. You give them their battery, you change their detector. You just, you know, you joke about the station. Like, I think that puts you in a much better mindset than if you were to come to work every day and be like, I'm going to help somebody today. And then you get, you know, 10 bullshit calls of people abusing the system. And you're like, well, this is dumb. Why am I doing this job? Like, I think it's just all about that mindset. I think between like the three answers, I was, you know, right in the center of it.
Yeah, they definitely know. I mean, at least where we've worked, I've worked in Midtown most of my career. They know that we will fix the problem, you know, like no matter what it is, we'll figure it out. Yep. I can only think of one time that it didn't happen. A guy called that, it was middle of the night, and he called, cause his cable was out. And that was one where, hey man, we can't help you with this one.
What the hell, tell you.
You're stealing it from the neighbor. I can't help you with this one. But that was the only time I can really think that like we haven't been able to figure something out, you know, for them.
Yeah.
At least, you know, make the house habitable or, you know, warm or something for the night. But
yep. They expect the problem to go away when they call us. You know, we do it all. We show up, and emergency or not, they expect us to be able to figure out how to fix it.
Yeah, somebody said peanut butter sandwiches. I read the other day where somebody was saying when they called 911, they expect an athlete, neurosurgeon, engineer. Yeah. Like that's what they expect every time. And unfortunately, we're not, but we fake it till we make it, I guess.
Yeah. Or the calendar ones, right? They always expect the calendar firefighters to get off.
We don't want that calendar.
No. No. So yeah, I mean, that kind of wraps up more our main questions. So then we've got our last two, our closing ones. So we've got a two-parter from Bobby Eckert for you guys.
Oh boy, the last one.
Yeah. And then it'll be up to you guys to come up with a question for our next guest, who is Jeffrey Eckert, his cousin. So Bobby's first question was, what are your thoughts on a RIT team versus an interior attack team? So kind of making the save, you know, we talk about fire rescue survey and everything. We know that most of the time it's the interior crews that are doing it. So what do you think is more important, having the people inside or getting the RIT team established?
We all have the same mindset on this. I guess I can open and they can add on.
Yeah.
You got the interior guys. I mean, they're the ones that are going to make that rescue for a firefighter. With that being said, you still need a proactive RIT team at a residential fire. Where we're at, burglar bars, center block basement windows, boarded up houses. Yeah. You need that proactive RIT team outside to make the job easier for the guys inside. So as long as you have that, the guys inside are usually going to be the ones to make the rescue. Mm-hmm. Now on the flip side, on a commercial building, we've had a line of duty death in a commercial building. We don't do commercial buildings every day. Nobody does. Residential is bread and butter, though. So you need that highly trained, proactive RIT team or multiple RIT teams on a commercial building. The guys inside might still make that rescue, but there's plans in place and systems in place for the exterior RIT teams to be able to go in on ropes for large area search and things like that. So... both. Yes. Residential guys inside, commercial is probably going to be your guys outside that have fresh bottles and ready to go. But yeah. RIT team is very important. I know us being on rescues, we'll be RIT sometimes. There's times I'm more exhausted being a RIT team than I am as an interior crew. You're forcing plywood off windows and burglar bars. Most of it's pretty easy to pull, but you get the hard stuff here and there. Yeah. The DPS systems that they're starting to do, metal to cover up the windows and doors, and they're bolted to jack and king studs. I mean, that stuff's hard to get off. So if you're doing it right as a RIT team, you're going to be tired. And I hope you guys are.
I don't know if you guys, if it was kind of same by you, but so, you know, I went through Fire One 6 years ago, seven. And like at that time, I remember the quote to me when they were doing RIT was, you'll see a group of guys standing around not doing anything. That's their job, you know, because they're RIT. They need to be perfect. They need to be ready to go. They need to have full bottles. They need to not be tired. And, you know, that's changed in the last, you know, since I've gotten on, which I've been full time for just over three. I don't think that ever has been the mentality when I've been there. So it was somewhere in that time frame that thought process changed for us, at least. Was that something that you guys saw? Because yeah, now it's all about softening the building. I mean, you're doing constant 360. We don't deal with much burglar bars, but getting windows ready, getting ladders thrown. Like, was that a kind of a same thing that you guys dealt with the 5 years ago or so?
We still see some companies, neighboring departments we run with, some of our own, and not to get too much into that, but it's a mindset thing. It's a training thing. You'll see crews standing out in the front yard. Nobody wants to be RIT. I mean, everybody wants to be inside the fire room, or making the grab. So we still see it here and there. A few years ago, we needed ladders thrown to the seaside of a apartment building, and we just had a RIT team standing there. Like, they could have easily thrown us a ladder, but it's a training and a mindset thing, that we're starting to see change on our job. To be more proactive RIT teams. You're getting enough of the young guys promoted, like Ryan, promoted up into officer positions, and they're changing their crews. We're getting a lot of young captains and young chiefs that see that we had a problem, and I think they're getting it fixed. I think getting it fixed to making everything better.
Yeah, what you were saying, like, you know, that was the mindset of just staying in the front yard. They're supposed to be just rested next to their basket and, you know, their snow sled and all that stuff, and just hanging out there with the chief or whatever. I think there's a new generation, and I would like to think this anyways, but I'm seeing it it seems like there's a lot of younger guys that are coming on that you like you guys and or them, for instance, that they want to go to work. Nobody wants to be outdone, number one. So, oh, it's cool. It's all right if I go over there and strip all these bars off of here or force this rear door or side door or garage or whatever and get everything set up. And so I think it's slowly changing to that. I think faster and faster, depending on where you work. But I think everybody's accepted that it's okay to kind of proactively soften that building up. And that does add to that writ. I mean, realistically, if I go make a window into a door and then they use that, well, technically the outside writ guys assisted with that rescue. So, I mean, it is kind of a two-part thing.
Yeah.
So, with the commercial side, yeah, that's a lot more work involved. And I think that's where writ teams really come into play. But that's a whole nother animal.
Yep. But who doesn't want to force seaside doors?
Right.
I mean,
yep.
I'll do that all day long.
Proactive writ on a commercial building, it's some of the most fun. You have some of the most challenging doors. You learn shit. I mean, same thing at a house. Use it as a training opportunity for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know, no two fires are alike. You know, you know, the houses might be built similar, but, you know, handyman Jim over here might have anchored these burglar bars differently than handyman Joe, you know. So you'll have to learn, use it as a learning opportunity. And, you know, in my opinion, there's, you know, the writ teams that just stand there and do nothing. There's one of two things going on. They've either not, me personally, I think they've never ever had that close call or been on a mayday call where that writ team was needed or what they did outside was useful to the rescue, or they just don't care. You know, they're in that mindset. You could be burned out or whatever. They're just tired of the BS. Who knows? They just don't care, you know, which is a terrible mindset to have when your brothers and sister on that fire ground inside that house, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So you have to have that mindset. You have to have that fire ground mindset at all times.
Absolutely.
I think you're really behind the eight ball if you're not proactive, because – being proactive, you're getting a look at the house. I mean, you're doing 360s, you're throwing that ladder. If you're really behind the eight ball, if you don't just sit there and you're like, okay, now I got a mayday. Now, I never looked at this house before, and we got like five things in front of me I have to force, and they're already waiting for my ladder. But then you're behind the eight ball, and that could be seconds to save their lives. So,
absolutely, man.
Get your ass up and do some work when you're on the red team.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, perfect. So the second part of Bobby's question for you guys is, I'm in Kansas City. Where is a non-commercial barbecue place to go? He said, where am I going to walk in, be worried that I might get robbed, I might get shot? I'm like, I don't care where it is.
Our first in district.
Yeah. It's underneath an old train bridge from like the 1800s, 1900s, something like that. It's old. And
what do you think? Same that's one, you probably, agree?
I got two.
That's
one of them.
You can't go wrong with Arthur Bryant's. That's another one. I love that place. And that's in a lovely up-and-coming neighborhood, you could say. And then Big T's, that's probably the good – I mean, you can't have anything bad there. But I would say if any of you guys come out here, we'd be more than happy to load you up in a truck. Let's go. We'll show you where to eat. We'll tell you what to order.
Oh, yeah.
And we also have a fellow firefighter that owns a barbecue joint. It's not the hole in a wall where you get stabbed. It's a nice, clean establishment. But Hog Jaw Barbecue in North Kansas City is pretty solid, too. He's a fireman for Kansas City, captain now, I believe. And he makes some damn good barbecue as well. So you guys come, we'll hit them all.
We can take your families to that one, to Hog Jaw.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll take a trip down south.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Perfect.
After you know that deal, so
awesome. Well, perfect. Sweet. Yeah, we'll definitely take you guys up on that offer. So the last one that we got, you know, for you guys to come up with is a question for our next guest, Jeffrey Eckert. So historically, you know, it's a question either that you have or that you did have as a new firefighter that you know you think you'd have a good insight on or a good answer for.
You like that?
Yeah, I think Ryan's going to take over on this one. At this the end, I have one more thing.
All right.
One thing, if I'm in the spot that I am in my career now, I wish I'd have gone to a handful of guys and asked them, if you were in my shoes, give me a handful of things, you know, 2 to 5 things that you wish that you'd have known or pursued to make yourself better, to be in the spot you're in right now. So passing along to the next guys, let's, I think it took me later on in my career to realize that we are molding the next generation. So it's on to us. I mean, we need to be passing that stuff along. So hopefully, you know, I told all my guys they're going to watch this. So this is one of those things. Give them a couple things, you know, to help them in their career.
Awesome. I like
that one. Alex, you had something to, you had another piggyback something?
I guess, yeah. I guess it's kind of the same thing. When you walk in the station, everybody, there's one guy. There's one guy that looks approachable. Find that one guy and ask him what you should be doing. Be on his hip and learn from him. He may not be the senior firefighter. Like on our rig, I'm the senior firefighter. But I'm more approachable than this guy. But he usually takes all the new guys under his wing and will show them what to do around the station, what to do around the rig. So find that guy and ask them the questions, because a lot of times you don't know what questions to ask. But it's also our job to give them the questions to ask and give them the information, point them in the right direction. Otherwise, they're just going to sit there and wait for you to tell them something. So absolutely. If you can find a question in that rambling, great.
Yeah.
If not, just take it as a piece of advice.
I like it. Perfect. I like it.
Yeah. You guys mind if I add something?
Absolutely.
Go for it.
Since this is a kind of a search-based episode with the victim drag strap, I kind of have a rhetorical question for guys to think about. I'm pretty passionate about search. Most of us, all of us are that are involved with the victim drag strap. That's kind of what our go-to is search. Something to think about. And this was told to me a couple years ago. In our house fires, guys that are actively searching, proactively searching in a good search position can identify truckmen by their pants. If you're out there teaching search and you're out there teaching victim removal, firefighter removal, make sure your bunker gear matches what you're preaching. Because you'll see these guys out there, and I'm not saying you need to have the most raggedy ass gear out there, most tore up gear. We have to replace it to keep ourselves safe, and you guys should be doing that. But you can tell the guys that are actually about it and not just talking about it. Their pant legs are tore up. It's like a good roof man mm-hmm. or roof guy. Look at the ass of his bunker pants. Has he slid a few roofs? Is he climbing? Is he scaling those peaks? You know, most of those guys up there, you can tell, have been there, done that a few times. If you're teaching search, make sure you're backing it up, because there's a lot of guys out there teaching search, and I have my opinions and they have theirs, and everybody's good. You know, we all learn from each other, but some of the techniques and things guys are teaching out there, make sure you're about it. So I know that wasn't a question, but just more of a
statement.
That was a one more thing.
More of a memo.
Just have to think about, you know, with this search
stuff. Food for thought. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
schooling right there.
Perfect. School of search. Yeah. Well, perfect. You know, that concludes all of our questions and, you know, last statement. Do you guys got any more to add? So, you know, anything, any shout outs, any trainings you guys are going to be at, anything you want people to be aware of, any last, you know, little things to throw in before we call this episode? Floor is yours.
I got one piece of advice and then I'm done. Back to the batteries, 3 a.m. You run smoke detector, 3 a.m. Have a good attitude about it. Mm-hmm. Take that chance as a training opportunity. You can look at the inside of their house. No person in their right mind, if I knock on their front door, hey, can I look inside? They're going to say no. But we're there to help them. They called us. Be respectful. Don't just go rummaging through stuff. But look at the layout. Where are the stairs to the second floor? Where are the stairs to the basement? So anytime we get called to them, stub toe pain, headache they've had for 2 weeks. Yeah, we don't want to be there, but we're there to help them. And it can make us better, because we're probably going to run a fire there or in a house similar to that. So you can get layouts of that house by changing a 9-volt battery.
That could save one benefit of EMS. One benefit.
The only one. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So take every opportunity and use it to your advantage.
Yeah, come check us out. If you guys are at FDIC, come grab us. We got a booth there. We'll be out and about, obviously, drinking soda pops at night. So and check us out on Facebook and stuff. If you got something to comment, send us videos, pictures, whatever you got, man. Just keep spreading the word. You guys are doing awesome. Well, thanks for having us on.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you guys for coming on. Thank you very much. Yeah, check them out. We'll have everything linked. So if you want to get your own, but yeah, check out on Facebook, everything, Victim Dragstrap. So thank you guys for coming on. Thank everybody for watching. 1 year strong. We'll keep going more. And as always, don't be a shitbag.
Thank you.